The following conversation was recorded prior to the actor's strike.
It has to feel a little dangerous, I think. Yeah. You have to feel, certainly at the beginning, I don't know if I can do this. And then you go at it. And that drives it. That gives you the hunger and the energy to go at it.
Prepare your ears, humans. Happy, Sad, Confused begins now.
Today on Happy, Sad, Confused, I'm Josh Horowitz. I'm thrilled to say we have a returning champion to the podcast. I'm going to make him blush, but he's one of our finest actors, the one and only Cillian Murphy. And we have a really good occasion to have you back on the podcast because sixth collaboration with Mr. Nolan. Congratulations, man.
Thanks very much.
So we kind of did This Is Your Life conversation last time. And this time, since it is a defining collaboration with Christopher, I want to talk a lot about the film, but also about your relationship with him. It started on Batman.
Yeah.
You were a fan of his work, I know,
yes.
Prior.
Yeah.
Did the man you met match the guy you had in your head? Like, did you have preconceived notions of what this guy was going to be based on Following, Memento, etc.?
Yeah, I'd seen Memento and Insomnia, and then I went back and watched Following in that order. I didn't know he was going to be so English. I didn't.
Talking about the tea or talking about the what are we talking
kind
about?
Of the whole package. you know, because he also has an Irish passport as well. You should ask him about that. Oh. So he has English.
He's
American.
A true James Bond. He can travel the world.
He can. I was, you know, struck immediately by, I guess, his brain. You know, it's kind of phenomenal. The first time I met him, just to give you a bit of context, was, God, it is 20 years ago, and I had just done 28 Days Later, and it had come out in America, and it made a bit of money, and it kind of done all right. Yeah. And then Chris had seen it, I think, and we met in Los Angeles, and we sat down, and we just talked about movies. For a few hours, you know, it wasn't just a brief meeting. It was a really, really good chat, and we really connected. I mean, he knows way more about movies than I do, and he's watched, I think he's probably watched every film.
I'm going to put him to the test after
ask
you.
Him, yeah. Ask him any film, and he'll have seen it in the cinema. And we got on, you know, we had a good laugh, and then he's also really funny. You know,
dry.
Yeah, he's very funny.
Yeah.
So then he asked me to audition for Batman, which I always thought was a kind of an absurd idea. I think secretly he did as well. He thought I was, you know, not right for it. But we did the test, and it was full production values. Like we shot on 35. They had the set and everything.
Wait, the old school that they don't do anymore.
Yeah, it was the real deal. You know, I prepared for it and. For me, it was just to get to be directed by Christopher Nolan when I was a young actor, you know.
Sure.
And I loved the experience of it, but I kind of thought that might be it because, you know, I didn't see myself as that character. And then, as he does always, he called me out of the blue, and he said, "Look, that's not going to work out for Batman." And I thought, "It's got to be Christian Bale." And I said, "Yes, that makes complete sense." And then he said, "But there's this other character." And that's kind of how it started.
Is playing a character through three movies that is wearing a bag over his head more or less fun than it appears? Is it just about what I would expect it to be?
I think it got progressively more bag heavy as the trilogy went on.
It's masochistic. He's just like, let's really put him to the test.
Yeah, I wear a bag on my head in Inception quite a bit as well.
There's water involved too.
Yeah, off a bridge with a bag on my head into the water.
He's confusing you with Tom Hardy, who likes to have his face covered.
He really enjoys it. I mean, every actor loves a mask, I suppose, but
right.
Four movies. I do remember when he called me up for Dunkirk. That was the first question I asked him.
Does this feel like penance? He's finally made, he's absolved himself of those wrongs that he's done to you in the past by giving you really a tremendous opportunity, and you more than meet the moment in this. When you get the call from Christopher that he wants you involved and he wants you to be Oppenheimer, does that kind of rekindle like those early experiences when you get like a job like, oh, this is that magical feeling that I'm chasing.
Yeah, it's one of those like very, very infrequent, very special, you know, moments that you'll never forget in your life, and this was definitely one of them. And again, he does it in such a way that it's quite a shock to your nervous system because it comes out of nowhere.
Right, he's not just priming get a call. You, it's just, yeah.
No, you know, and, you know, the script is written, he's got it, and then he just called and said, I'd like you to play Oppenheimer. And, yeah, it's a very strange, it puts you into a very strange sort of, you get incredibly excited and incredibly terrified at the same time.
I was going to ask you about fear because, I mean, look, you've been front and center in some major films, obviously. You've done every kind of movie, every budget level. But that never goes away? That even in the hands of Christopher, who you know is going to take care of you?
Yeah, I think it would be dangerous if it went away, honestly. Yeah. I think if you ever were cruising in your career and felt sort of confident in everything that you did, then there would be no challenge and no excitement and no danger. It has to feel a little dangerous, I think. Yeah. You have to feel, certainly at the beginning, I don't know if I can do this. And then you go at it. And that drives it. That gives you the hunger and the energy to go at it.
Yeah.
And we had a long prep period. Like he came to Ireland to give me the script in September 21, I think it was. And then we didn't shoot till the end of February 22. So it was 6 months, in effect, of me prepping and going over to LA and doing camera tests and makeup tests and costume tests and then working very closely with Chris on the kind of development of the character. So I had a long period. So the sort of terror sort of morphs into like just focus.
Right.
Then you get this really crystal focus on what you have to do. And then, yeah, I mean, the fact that it's Christopher Nolan, the fact that we have this history together gives you an awful lot of confidence. And
yeah, the chances I'm going to be on the first Christopher Nolan movie that he just swings and misses at is very unlikely.
Very unlikely, yeah.
I mean, he specializes in protagonists that are conflicted, clearly. I mean, and there is no greater conflict than what Robert Oppenheimer faced, facing the moral quandary of moral quandaries.
Uh-huh.
Rich material, to say the least, for an actor. I mean, how do you track? I mean, this is a massive undertaking in every way. I mean, the scale is huge, and yet it is, like all his films, very intimate too. We are close to your face. We are in your head for much of this film. Was it tough to kind of track the progress, the back and forth? I mean, were you shooting in sequence? What were the challenges once you get into production of keeping your eye on the ball of who this man was?
Well, the first thing to point out was that the script was written in the first person.
Right.
So I knew very quickly that it was going to be subjectively told through Oppenheimer's eyes, and everything in the color segments of the film, which are the kind of majority of the film, are seen through Oppenheimer's eyes.
Right.
And then the black-white segments are through, obviously, Strauss' point of view. So I knew that the audience would have to be with Oppenheimer all the time.
Yeah.
We were very clear about that. And it wouldn't be about judging him, but it would be being right beside him while he was experiencing these incredible events and having to make these, life-changing kind of decisions for himself and for the world and all of that. And in terms of going at it, you mean on set in terms of after the prep?
Well, I'm curious because, like, for instance, are the IMAX cameras still huge? I don't know if he's been able
They're ginormous, yeah.
So, and a lot of it is, as I say, like, on you, on your face.
Yeah.
And talk about focus. You're talking about focusing before. This must call upon all your faculties to kind of, like, really laser focus and be in the moment.
Yeah.
This giant apparatus, like, very close to
Yes. You do get used to the IMAX cameras after a while, you know.
Yeah.
It does, and the way Chris always shoots it, it's, you know, it's him and Hoyte.
Right.
And, you know, the boom op, and that's it. It's always one camera. And there was no Steadicam, there was no cranes. They were very old school in this. they wanted to go get rid of all the toys for this one and go right back to basics. That's a decision they made aesthetically, himself and Hoyte, from the beginning. So I suppose what I'm trying to say is that the set environment, the working environment, being on the floor, never felt overwhelming. It felt very kind of safe. And that's what Chris, that's the sort of atmosphere that he wants for his actors is you know, you can experiment. It's a laboratory, yeah. You know? You can try things and make a fool of yourself, and that's okay. That's I've always felt that with Chris, you know. I've always felt incredibly safe working with him and trying stuff out. And he's an incredibly collaborative director, and particularly when it's come from his massive brain.
No, he's a writer director first. He's not just like a director for hire. These are like he feels these in his bones.
Yeah, and you know, he kind of. It's almost like he's engineered the script in his head already.
Right.
You know, he knows frame by frame, shot by shot, how this thing is gonna end up. And when you shoot a Chris Nolan script, that is what you see on screen.
But it can't approximate. You can imagine it, but I would imagine. I was going to ask you. You've seen the finished film by now.
I have. Yeah.
So you had the experience on set, and it was occurring to me that when I was prepping to talk to you. Like, for instance, I think about like the final scene between you and Pete Postlethwaite in Inception, which on set. Between the two of you, must feel very intimate again.
Yeah.
Almost no dialogue, if there's any dialogue.
Yeah.
And then what he's able to achieve through the marriage of intercutting music, Tom in the background, it takes on a whole nother level. And similarly here, do you have that kind of feeling like, oh, I made one movie, but what the finished product is just almost an exponentially different movie?
It's almost, it's always way better than you could ever possibly imagine. But I just have complete and utter trust in his vision.
Yeah.
You know, always have done from the very beginning. He's so accomplished and he understands every single facet of the movie making business.
Right.
You know, and on set, he understands every single person's job. He's over every single detail of costuming, of set design, of locations, of everything. So you feel completely confident. On Inception, for example, was such a complicated script, and you know, you'd oftentimes be, you know, asking Chris, now what level of consciousness are we at, or whose brain, or whose dream are we? But he just knows.
Of course he
doesn't. So it's a real luxury for an actor to feel that secure in the director's vision and genius.
The cast is. I don't even know what adjective to use about the cast. The ensemble is remarkable. It reminded me, like, growing up, like, back in the heyday of, like, Oliver Stone movies, like JFK and Nixon, where, like, every bit part was by, like, movie stars but great actors.
Yeah.
And it can somehow work, and it works here. I don't know. I don't even know how to pick favorites or anything. But, like, for instance, Downey. To see Downey in this context is just, I love him as Iron Man, but to see him, like, really choose something a little different must have been a treat, like a vanity to really go somewhere.
Oh, he is remarkable in this film. Like, remarkable. And working with him, I mean, I kind of liken it to playing music, you know. I used to play a lot of music, and sometimes when you're playing with another player, there's this kind of non-verbal connection, you know, and it feels like jazz, you know. And that's what it felt like with Downey and me. Sometimes it just felt he's the most generous, invested scene partner you could possibly have. And of course, like, he can extemporize or improvise like that. And they were among my favorite scenes, I have to say, working with him. He's just kind of, he's electric in the movie, you know?
Speaking of electric actors, one of the films, your collaborations with Christopher that we didn't mention was Dunkirk, and Barry Keoghan, who's just killing it. Did you take a special delight? I mean, he's part of the extended Batman family. Did you see what he did with Joker?
I did, of course. I did, of course. He was amazing. I can't wait to see him, like, get a bit more screen time. They're doing it again, right?
Yeah, they're doing Batman, too. I don't know if he's involved or not, but I hope he is.
Oh, he's phenomenal, Barry, you know, and he's just proven his kind of range and versatility. And,
yeah.
And he's still such a gorgeous kid. He's probably not a kid now. He's a father now, in fact. So, yeah, I haven't seen him in a while, but I'm so proud of Banshees and, you know, what they achieved with that movie. Yeah. So, yeah, he's a great, great, great actor.
I remain convinced that Christopher will be directing a Bond film, and I'm going to place a bet with him. I think he's going to do the next one. I feel like it's time.
Okay.
Doesn't it feel like it's the right moment, Killian? They need a new Bond. They need a new director.
I'm not going to speak for Christopher Nolan.
No, I just as a fan, wouldn't you want to see Christopher Nolan do a Bond movie, or no?
I would. Of course I'd go and see a Christopher Nolan Bond movie. I feel, though, he's on a journey with his own material.
No, I don't want to start to see him do a director for Higher Things. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But that feels so part of him, too, in a way.
Yeah. I mean, he's a huge Bond fan. He loves the movies. And I think you can see sort of there's parts of every movie you see. That's a little bit Bond, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
You know, not consciously, but I think you can kind of see them, particularly in Inception, you can see that.
Yeah, on Magic Service he's talked about.
Yeah, and Tenet, you can see a bit of it as well. But I don't know. I don't know. Listen, ask him.
Okay.
I'd be interested to hear the
answer. Do you want me to put
a
good word in? Not that you need my help. What do you want to play in Christopher Nolan's Bond movie?
I'm not James Bond, man. That ship has sailed, shall we say.
Yeah. You could be anything. You could be Q, you could be M, you could be the bad guy.
Let's see what Chris comes up with.
Okay. Okay. Fair enough. Some other bits and bobs. Last time we spoke was, I believe it was season 5 of Peaky had just come out. Does it feel like Peaky is in the rear view now? Like, have you kind of like separated yourself like from Tommy and that experience, or is it too soon to say that?
That's a good question, because I often thought I wouldn't be able to like really give a perspective on it until a few years had passed. A few years have passed now. It was 10 years of my life playing that character. You know, I think the show succeeded because the writing was so phenomenal.
Yeah.
I mean, if there's a movie there, and if there's more story to tell, I'll definitely have the conversation. But I think we ended really, really, really well on the TV version of it. And I'm very proud that the show never plateaued, in my opinion.
Totally.
You know, I think. Each series was kind of richer than the last, and so I'm very proud of that we achieved that. And I'm also very proud of that people are still discovering it. That's the kind of beauty of streaming, isn't it? That people kind of discover it all the time, and there's new fans turning up all the time. So I'm really proud of the
cool kids like Peaky, like the ones with taste. Let's be honest, like, you know.
Well, it's got a great soundtrack, which I'm very proud of. So I don't know.
So are you of the mind, though, like, because there have been different roles that, obviously, we talked about Jonathan Crane, Scarecrow, that you reprised, like, is it, as an actor, is it easier to say goodbye definitively to a role or to always kind of have that door open? You know, we've talked before, 28 Days Later keeps coming up.
Yeah.
Always come up until Alex and Danny and you say no more.
Yeah.
Like, for instance, is that door still ajar?
Oh, it's certainly for me. I mean, I'd love to do, I think it would have to be 28 years later at this stage, really.
We're getting closer
to get away
we're
with
all
it.
Feeling a little old now.
Yeah, well, yeah, I think realistically, because that movie, God, when did that, 2000 that came out?
Right,
yeah. So.
Oh, wow, yeah, we're not so far off.
No, we're not that far off. I'd love to. But that's not an exclusive or anything. I think,
no,
you know, there needs to be a script, and Danny needs to find the time, and Alex needs to feel that there's more story to tell. Again, that is a movie I watched with my kids not too long ago, and I feel that one, you know, it's aged well, not aged at all, whatever the correct expression is.
Yeah, I was going to ask about your kids' appreciation of your work, because I've had this conversation with many actors, and usually it's like they're the last people to appreciate their own parents' work. Are they so they can appreciate? They can. It would be tragic if they were the only kids that can't enjoy Christopher Nolan's Batman films, for instance.
Yeah, they're getting a bit older now. They have very sophisticated taste. So, that you know, they don't go searching for my films, but if one turns up, or they love, like, Quiet Place 2, for example.
Right.
They love that movie. But I think it's much healthier if your kids are underwhelmed by what you do, no matter what it is. I think that's, you know, that's a healthy dynamic.
Too much hero worship is a little
problematic. Yeah, you don't need that.
So you don't have to worry about that.
No, I definitely don't have to worry about that, yeah.
In your career, Have you ever felt a period of time where you felt like boxed in, typecast, like you were in a rut that you were questioning where the career was going to go? Or has it felt like, you know, if there was a week that went by, something was around the corner?
You know, I feel I've been lucky in that I've moved always between theater and right. television and movies. So if one avenue got a little clogged at one point, I could just jump into another avenue. And
right.
I probably have done that in the past, you know. And I think I've always felt that if anyone would say to any artist, we love that, can you do it again?
Right, which is...
You know, and that happens not just in our business, but it happens, you know, if any time there's a potential to something being commodified or
yes.
Being repeated, I think the artist or the creative person can...
Runs in the other direction and says anything else.
Yeah. So, but luckily, I would always jump from one to the other. So I've never felt that way. And re-collaborating with people is always really good for your creative soul. Like like Chris calling me up, or I work a lot with Enda Walsh, this playwright, and we've made four plays. We just made a film together, you know, working with Danny a couple of times. I find that keeps it rich.
Yes.
And so I've been lucky that way.
So, and speaking of that, kind of like running in a different direction, like my sense from you is you're not one that kind of engages. You're not online. You're not like, you know, checking the memes that are involving you. But like, for instance, I see a lot of fan art of you as like Dr. Doom.
Right.
Like, have you done your comic book villain thing? Does that hold any interest? Or like, would you, each character is different. You know, Dr. Doom is different than Scarecrow. Who, you know, as long as the script and the person's there, then sure, we can talk.
Like, yeah, I think you've answered the question.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I'm always, it's always about the script.
Yeah.
So I'll read, you know, if someone sends me a script, I'll read it. But yeah. And you never know what turns up. That's what I love about this business. I had no idea that Chris was going to call me 21 with this. You know, it just happens, and that's the kind of the beauty of this business. It's so unpredictable and wild, and you don't know what's going to turn up.
Does part of you wish he could have given you the heads up? Like, he was working on this for a long. This is not something you dash off in a week.
I think he relished that phone call. Like,
that's restraint. That is holding. Like,
I know, but he's a master of that. But I think he relished being able to call him, because I think he knew how much I really wanted to play a lead for him. You know, I really think he knew that.
You did do some theater here in New York.
Yeah.
Right before the pandemic, relatively right before the pandemic. 2018,
that's right, yeah.
Are you the type of actor that keeps a list of like theatrical roles, in particular classic roles? Like, are you itching to go back to stage, or is it sort of when, again, the right opportunity comes?
I would love to go back to the stage. Weirdly, I prefer new writing in
okay.
theater. I've often felt that, you know, there's been so many extraordinary actors and actresses playing those classic roles that I don't know what I could possibly add to it. So
right.
I like breaking ground with new writing. That's always been the thing that's excited me in theater, or certainly more recently. But again, it's about timing, and it's about the right material. You know.
What do you watch television-wise? Are you?
I love Succession. I mean, everyone in the world loves Succession, right?
Yeah.
Haven't finished the final season, so don't tell me. I think it's magnificent. some of the best writing out there at the moment, and the performance is just mind-blowingly good.
Yeah. Does that? I mean, my sense from you is you still get inspired by, like, it gives you a boost to see like the Barry Keoghans and the Next Generation.
Oh, for sure. You know, you get tingles when you see great acting. You know, like, no matter where you see it, like if it's above a pub in North London, and you go and you see a play and there's a phenomenal performance in it, that gives me tingles, you know, just to see it. I'm always looking for great performances wherever they might come from, you know.
I'm going to end with our profoundly random questionnaire. One question for you, Killian, is do you collect anything?
Vinyl? Yeah.
Old school.
Yeah.
Christopher probably appreciates that. I feel like there's
he probably does.
Has like a gramophone.
Yeah.
Have you ever asked for an autograph from an actor?
I asked directors to sign my script.
Nice.
And I keep them. I only recently started to do that. But yeah, that's really the only. I much prefer autographs to selfies. Not a selfie fan.
Yeah, no, that's hard. Is there like an actor that you grew up with, like that you are now consider a peer that it makes you giggle in a way as a schoolboy to see them like pop up on your phone? You get a text from like, I don't know, Gary Oldman. Like, how does Gary Oldman? How am I an acquaintance of Gary Oldman? That kind of a thing.
Well, Matt Damon, you know, I've admired his work since I was, even before I was an actor. And not only his work, but also I admire his values as a human being.
Yes.
And so we got to work on Oppenheimer, and now his company, AE, have just produced a movie.
I noticed that, yeah.
That I produced and acted in, which was written by Andrew Walsh. So that's kind of a lovely, lovely feeling. And I really, really admire the sort of value of their studio, you know, of AE, because it's artist-led, which I think is really exciting for the industry.
That is one of the, I mean, you kind of alluded to this before, one of the rewards of sticking around. I feel the same way on my side of things, is to like establish relationships and to kind of be along for the ride with people and to revisit people at different times in their lives. And there's the shorthand, but also just really connect on a personal level at different times in their lives.
Yeah. I agree.
Yeah. What's the wallpaper on your phone, Killian?
Oh, I got recently, I just gone totally minimalist black, like took everything off.
What?
Yeah, it's like, it's just, even all of the apps, they're all just black. So it's none of that stupid childish, like, Apple phone color thing. It's just black.
Wow, you're dark period, you're black.
Like a nihilist.
What precipitated this? Rough day? What just happened?
It's not less nihilism, more minimalism.
Gotcha.
Do you know what I mean?
Cutting out the noise a little
bit,
right?
So, yeah. And I turn off an awful lot of notifications. So it's just a black blob.
I love it.
Yeah.
So the last actor you were mistaken for?
Doesn't really happen to me.
So. Are you aware, again, I know you're not online, this baseball player that's been mistaken for you?
Yes, I've been sent
that. Has this come up today, I'm sure?
Yeah. No, you're the first person to... but wasn't that like an AI-generated image or something?
I don't think so. Have you seen the image?
Tyler Glasnow? Many people have said... I need to turn off more notifications.
Yes.
Yeah.
You've got a doppelganger. You've got a long-lost twin.
Yeah, well, he's a lot better at baseball than I
am. But you're a bit better at acting, probably.
Well... We've all got our skills.
Is there a movie you're embarrassed to say you've never seen?
Gone with the Wind. I don't think I've ever seen Gone with the Wind.
Okay. That's okay.
Thanks.
I absolve you.
Thank you. You've
made up for it.
Thank you.
What's the worst note a director has ever given you?
A director once asked me, am I a good director? So, I mean, that's the end of the relationship then.
They're looking for validation from...
The actor, the director.
This goes the other way, buddy.
Yeah. We're the needy
actor,
ones.
Yes. Didn't they teach you anything at directing school?
Yeah. You need to make me feel good about myself all day long and bring me things like tea. Yeah.
In the spirit of Happy, Sad, Confused, who's an actor that makes you happy?
Who's an actor that makes me...
Just like you see them on screen.
Oh, joy. God. Right now, I'd have to say Jesse Buckley. Yeah, so I think she's phenomenal.
See her in Cabaret? Did you get a chance to see
no,
her?
No, did not see that show. I would love to see it.
Remarkable. A movie that makes you sad?
Oh, God. Movie that makes me sad. Sad, like sad, or like just tear, like emotional? There is one that recently did that to me. I can't remember. I remember seeing Interstellar it's a Chris Nolan junket. I remember seeing Interstellar in the cinema on my own and having little kids, and it was that was very emotional. That made me cry.
Yeah, that connection between him and Chastain and that exchange.
And missing all your kids' childhood, like that was powerful.
And a food that makes you confused. Most important question.
A food that makes me confused.
You see it on the menu. You see it come out. I don't get it.
Oh man,
you guys are crazy. What's up with that?
I don't What's the Japanese food where they fry everything? Like, tempura. Do they fry the tempura?
Yeah. No?
Not a fan of that.
Anything fried, deep fried.
That's
good.
An American thing right now.
Yeah, we're disgusting that way. I apologize. It's in my bones, in my DNA. I can't help what I am.
Not a tempura guy.
Well, you're going to live a lot longer than me. anything I should put a good word in? I'm going to try to get you a Bond role. What's the genre he should take on next? What's the kind of film Christopher Nolan should do? Does he have a comedy in him? Does he have a musical?
He is very funny. Musical, I mean, like the score for Oppenheimer, I mean, it's just out of this world.
Yeah.
I don't know if he has a musical in him. Don't know the answer to that.
I'll get back to you on his answers. We'll compare and contrast.
Okay, let me know.
Truly, man, this is a remarkable piece of work, and you hold it all together. I hope you can appreciate that and enjoy it as an audience member now and separate yourself for a little bit, because it's a special one.
Oh, thank you so much.
All right, good to see you as always.
Thanks, man.
Thanks for the time.
And so ends another edition of Happy, Sad, Confused. Remember to review, rate, and subscribe to this show on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm a big podcast person. I'm Daisy Ridley, and I definitely wasn't pressured to do this by Josh.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.